How's everybody doing today? How you feeling? So-so? Okay? Making it through? It's the 11:15 service, so you might be a little bit more awake than the 9:30. I hope you are all well. I found myself shouting a few months back, shouting at my radio, shouting the strangest of things. I was saying, "This dog don't wag," again and again, shouting at my radio. Have you ever heard that phrase before? Wag the dog. You've heard that phrase? It's used to indicate that attention is purposefully being diverted from something of greater importance to something of lesser importance. That attention is being pulled away from that thing that needs our attention to that thing that doesn't. It helps if you imagine somebody wagging the dog. So the tail isn't wagging, they're wagging the whole dog by holding on to the tail. At least that's what I imagine when I hear the phrase. "This dog don't wag," I shouted. I'm glad nobody else could hear me. I've been listening to a radio show on NPR. The host was interviewing the creator of an ad campaign, actually of two ad campaigns, and the host was asking them about these two ad campaigns. They were both ad campaigns to help kids stay away from binge drinking. I shouldn't call them kids, it was done in colleges. Now they're kids to me, but college kids. This ad campaign was a whole bunch of posters that were put up in college dorm rooms. And the first campaign was very much like that one that I grew up with, that was, this is your brain on drugs, and an egg is frying in a frying pan. Do you remember that one? This ad campaign was similar in that it was saying, this is what binge drinking does to you. If you binge drink, these are the health effects. This is what might happen to you. You might be in trouble. But then the interviewee said, this campaign didn't work at all. It didn't seem to do what we wanted it to do. And so we came up with this second campaign. And the second campaign to keep people from binge drinking, it put images of kids, college kids, on the posters, and there were images of kids that were showing them in terrible states, showing that if you binge drink, you will be seen as slutty, as slovenly, as dumb. Other people will see you in this way if you binge drink. That campaign worked. And the interviewee said, wow, it was great, it was wonderful, this campaign worked, and celebrated it. And the host celebrated right along with the interviewee, celebrating the success of this campaign. This upset me. This upset me a whole lot. First of all, because I didn't like that campaign. Kids, especially kids when they get to college, they carry so much shame with them, shame that they're not good enough, that other people will see them in a certain way, and to put that on a poster and to use that shame against them, even if it helped them get to maybe something that was healthier, but is that right? And the second thing that I didn't like, and this is what I didn't like even more, is that the host did not even pause to question the morality of that second campaign. They didn't even pause to question the morality. Is manipulation that insidious in our culture that the interviewer didn't even think to ask, is it safe? Is it politic? Is it moral? This dog don't wag, I shouted. But as I did, I knew it was a plea, not a declaration. I'm wagged. I'm manipulated, just like everybody else, by posters, by ads, by implied social contracts. Reverend Scott likes to laugh at me. If I see an advertisement for ice cream as we're driving somewhere, I need to get ice cream immediately. And I can laugh at this. As I can laugh at my seemingly instinctual discomfort when my neighbor rolls her eyes at the pepper plants in my front yard. I want that ice cream, and I want my neighbor to like me. I can laugh at these because as I am being wagged, I realize it, and I know how to combat the force. But sometimes the wagging takes on a force that is overwhelming. The tenor of this election is violent, angry, and honestly, it's scary as hell. It's hard to stay focused. It's hard to keep my attention on what my attention should be on. A recent poll showed that a supermajority of the American people feel either scared, angry, or embarrassed, or all three. That supermajority, it's composed of people on all sides, standing with all the candidates. And there is conscious manipulation, of course, associated with every campaign. A good campaign strategist thinks ardently about how to best focus the attention of people on what they want our attention on. But it's not that kind of wagging that bothers me. I think we've learned to see that. I feel like we are losing the sense of hope that secures our republic, that fuels our faith in freedom. Whose fault is it? You want me to say a name, don't you? But what I'm gonna say is under that question, there's another question. And this one I feel like is even more important. What is a president? What is a president to us? What is a president? I've heard the American president called the leader of the free world, the most powerful person on the globe. But there is a symbolic meaning to the presidency, too. The president is the symbolic head of this great American experiment, and the president and the process that we use to elect the president is a symbol of this experiment's success or its failure. I say experiment because this is the first and the only democracy in a plural context, serving different social classes, religions, groups with diverse identities, a democracy in a plural context, the first of its kind, the only. Is it going to work? I walk on untrodden ground, said George Washington. And when this democracy in these pluralistic waters is working, I am filled with pride and joy to be an American. But when it is aching, as it is now, it's hard to keep my attention on what matters. Do you hear me? Does it hurt? This great American experiment was and is an experiment in liberty. Can we, a pluralistic people, use our freedom and our liberty well? Can we freely govern ourselves, choosing wisely the direction of our nation, not only for ourselves, but for our neighbors? I did a 360 last night. I was reading some articles on the election. I didn't expect to do a 360. I expected to know exactly what I was reading and see it the way I've been seeing everything else. And then I came across a name that I recognized. Have you heard the name Kristen Anderson yet? Kristen Anderson shared just a name, just a woman among many who has shared a complaint against a candidate. And I was reading it just like I read everything else, and then I saw her picture. I know Kristen. I grew up with Kristen. Kristen is one of my best friend's sisters, one of my best friend's sister. Then I read the article again, and in it I read something completely different than I did the first time. What had been a call to get out my vote, became a call to empathy. It was my friend there. I was no longer thinking, do I believe her? Do I care? But I was thinking, how can I help her? Because what she is going through now, this American experiment, it relies on our ability to see our brothers and sisters as just that, as that person we grew up with, human beings. But elections, by their very nature, they can turn us from these most human qualities. It will be found an unjust and unwise jealousy, again said Washington, to deprive a man of his natural liberty upon the supposition that he may abuse it. He knew. He knew we would abuse our liberty. He knew we would abuse our freedom, but he thought we should have it anyway. Is this election season safe for us? Safe for our nation? No. It's not safe. It's not safe for Kristen anymore. But that's how it's made. An election is made to push against the limits of brotherly and sisterly love. Push against those limits. Let me pause here to get back to that idea of freedom. The fact that we have freedom so that we can freely choose our own direction. What is freedom? It's not limitlessness. We can't fly, or at least I can't, with my own wings. We have to eat and sleep. I might not need ice cream, but I need some food. We have limits. There are things that we need. So freedom, if it's not about limitlessness, it must be about choices, about our ability to make choices within those limits, right? I like to pinpoint the moment of freedom in the pause before action. Freedom is there in the moment of consideration when we weigh our choices and set our path. Freedom is the pause that allows us to bring our conscience to bear in the making of our decision. My freedom has been compromised by all kinds of dog wagging. So if you can remember back, try and think of the toys that were big in your young years, the toys that everybody had to have. In my years, I remember Teddy Ruxpin. Anybody else remember Teddy Ruxpin? That you had to have Teddy Ruxpin? Care Bears. Now, Care Bears were big. Everybody, all of my friends, had to have Care Bears, and they had to have Cabbage Patch Kids, tons and tons of Cabbage Patch Kids. For some miracle, I was able to avoid all of these toys. I saw my friends get the Teddy Ruxpin, but then they would have it and love it for a couple minutes and then put it in the corner and not care anymore. And I watched this happen again and again, so I was able to distance myself from these wants somehow. I was not wagged into needing those toys. But then came strawberry shortcake. I needed strawberry shortcake. Maybe it was the smell. She smelled like strawberries. And there was the blueberry one. And the lemon meringue one, and I had to have them, and I got them, and I cared for a week. And then I realized that they hadn't saved me. There was still a hole in my heart of want. I wanted something else. This strawberry shortcake was not the answer to all of my dreaming. What would be then? I had not paused to deliberate. I had not had that thought of should strawberry shortcake be the answer, I just reacted with that full want, and I got her. And it didn't work. Our faith tradition is guarded against manipulation from the start. We are first a people who choose. Choice is tantamount to faithful expression. It is what we do when we put our faith in our conscience as our guide. In the 19th century, a wave of religious fervor swept this nation, and it was called the Second Great Awakening. And Baptist and Methodist and other faith communities welcomed fiery circuit rider preachers, even more fiery than Reverend Scott. And these preachers, they stuffed their services with the threat of damnation and promised that they alone, those preachers, they would save the faithful from hell. Come on up here. I'm Teddy Ruxpin. I will save you. I'm Strawberry Shortcake. Come my way, my light. Our Unitarian forebears preached ardently against these services, calling the Second Great Awakening a grand manipulation of the faithful. While I'm not as afraid of emotion in church as these forebears were, you might say they were the frozen chosen. You did a good job of that this morning. Still, I can't abide the use of fear to scare us into good behavior. Our forebears wanted us to choose heaven. To choose heaven consciously, to make it here, to create it here on earth by establishing caring communities. And they wanted us to do this not because hell is so scary or because a single preacher is so convincing, but because heaven is what our conscience truly at its core desires. This long American election season feels to me like a third great awakening. We are being promised salvation. And with all the fear that I am feeling, there is a part of me that wants to believe. I'm certain we'll all vote our consciences. I know we will. We will pause and we will use our freedom to vote for the next president of the United States. I know this. I know this season, with all its commercials and debates, with all the rhetoric, can feel manipulative, but I know we've learned to look past that manipulation and choose as we are called. But here is my prayer, that we will not be distracted by this election so that we ignore the root of all the mayhem. Because this is perhaps how elections can and do wag us. They wag us into believing that our elected leaders can save us, that they are the answer, not us. Not each and every one of us using our freedom for good, not for our own good, but for the good of our neighbor. Salvation doesn't rest in one individual. The president is the symbol of our freedom, but we are the ones who are free. Ask not what your country can do for you. That's kind of what I'm saying here. People are hurting. Lots of people are hurting. Lots of people feel disenfranchised and hopeless. What would our forebears say? Believe in your neighbors as you believe in yourself. No matter the campaign sign they've put on their lawns. Listen to your neighbor's pain and share your own. Remember that the people whose stories are being used for a singular purpose are human beings with their own purposes, their own heart and mind. Vote your convictions. That matters. But hold on to your freedom to love. And hold on to your faith in our power to save ourselves and our world. Amen.